Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I'm your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the 13.5th, the 13 and a half of the annual Fall Spectacular Show.
What?
Well, you may remember several years ago, we lost count of how many annual Fall Spectacular Shows we had done. This one would either be the 13th or the 14th, so we averaged it, and it is the 13.5th annual Fall Spectacular. And today's episode, Dead Men Don't.
Is that how you say it, 13.5th?
Give me some other options. The 13 and a half of
That sounds pretty good. Yeah.
You just want me to look stupid, and you're doing a good
job. Well, no, I mean, I want you to sound stupid, too.
Yeah, thanks. We so much appreciate the support of the cast and crew here at Moorhead State Public Radio.
The listeners just can't get an idea for how stupid you look.
And now they're all trying to say that same thing at home.
Yeah, the 13
as well,
and so. A half of this.
Yeah, somebody, okay. Hey, that's a good thing. Tell us, how do you say that? Where's our English people? Where's our English majors?
Yeah, I thought my concern was it would be the 13.5th radio show, and that's not true. It is the 13.5th, not a 13.5 radio show. That's important, you see.
The 13th and a half?
Yeah, the 13 and a half, the 13 and 5/10.
There you go. Maybe that's
annual
better.
Fall Spectacular. It's math. It's just simple math. It's either the 13th or the 14th. To be the most accurate we could be, it's the 13.5.
Wait a minute. It should be 13. It should be 6 out of 12th, right, if it's half?
Moving on. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio. Special radio wave to those brilliant folks at the MSU Ron G. Eagland Space Science Center. And here, already gumming up the show, from the University of Kentucky, Physician Assistant Program Assistant Professor Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello, and you're welcome.
Yeah, and from the University of Kentucky, also to explain to you our web presence, the Executive Director of Networking and Infrastructure at UK, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the show at WMKY.org. That's Moorhead State Public Radio's website. Go on that website, find Health Matters, look at the list of shows, click on the link, listen to the show, enjoy the show. If you miss something, that's your way to go back and listen to it. Of course, you can get that on a podcast. You can find it on iTunes. It is totally possible to find. You just got to do a little searching. And again, so use the Moorhead State Public Radio website to get that recorded show. But then after that, don't settle for one-way communications. Get involved. Give us some feedback. Ask us questions. And where you do that is facebook.com/HMRadioshow. That is a fan page on Facebook. It's set up for you, for your ability to interact with us. We want to see feedback, questions, comments. You'll see us post stuff about the show, stuff about just current events. I mean, I can't believe that Tony won't post something about falling or vaccinations, you know, because it's that time of year where he can't shut up about vaccinations. So certainly on Facebook, that's where you'll find that sort of thing. And we do expect to hear from you. So again, want to find the fan page? Go to facebook.com/HMRadioshow.
Our sponsor for this show and every Fall Spectacular, Shoes with Tread. When a fearsome monster wants you dead, when terror fills your heart with dread, you best be wearing Shoes with Tread. That's right.
Were you a theater major?
What better way to escape the ghouls, the goblins, the ghosts of Halloweens than with Shoes with Tread? And as a matter of fact, if you have an elderly loved one who fears falling, what better way to maintain your balance than to wear Shoes with Tread? Remember, one-third of people over age 65 and half of people over age 80 fall each year, around 1 in 3 older people overall. A survey of the footwear purchased by 128 community-dwelling people, this was back in 2017, reveals the majority wore slippers in their homes. 32% of women and 28% of men usually walked around barefoot or wore socks. And if you remember Tom Cruise's premier movie, Risky Business, you may remember socks are extremely slippery. That iconic scene of him.
Come on, go ahead and describe it.
That old-time rock and roll.
Create that visual.
He slid into the hallway on socks. If he were wearing shoes with tread, that scene would have never happened.
Do you really think that scene was the socks? Is that what you think?
I think the socks created the scene. His entrance would have been a lot more I think, more frictional, more less
exciting.
That mm-hmm. too, if he had not been wearing the socks.
I mean, wasn't it the music?
61% of falls occur outdoors. Shoes with heels greater than 2.5 centimeters, that's basically an inch high. Mm-hmm. Double the risk of falls compared with athletic shoes. Walking barefoot or wearing socks increase your risk of falling by up to 11 times, whether you are dancing or not, compared to walking in athletic shoes. So it's pretty clear. If you have tread, it's one of the things that you can do to protect yourself. The shoes should be properly fitting. There also is some evidence that a high-topped shoe, they call it a high shoe collar, may stabilize the ankle and prevent falls as well. But we are focusing on tread. I know many of my patients, I do house calls for hospice. I do a lot of geriatrics work, and many of my patients, when I do house calls, they are wearing house shoes with absolutely no tread, or they're in sock feet when they come to answer the door, and that is how you fall in your house. That's our sponsor, Shoes with Tread. We'll talk more about that in our second fractional portion. We start off with I would just say, truly, a horrific article. I think there's a couple of take-home points from this, but this makes me extremely depressed, angry.
It's pretty frightening.
It is. October 10, 2014, Michael Cleveland, Amherst, New York, suffered a heart attack and collapsed while shopping nearby, taken to DeGraff Memorial Hospital. Was treated there, and they attempted resuscitation, but they were not able, apparently, to get a pulse and to get his respirations back. After 25 minutes, the emergency room physician came out and told the family that he had passed away. They allowed the family in to see the deceased, and they noticed he was moving. He moved his arm. They called he tried to push the tube that they put down his throat. He tried to push that out. They could see that. His chest continued to move up and down as if he were trying to breathe. They called the physician in. They said, he is still alive. And he said, well, that's just the medicine. Once the medicine wears off, he will, in fact, be dead. He is dead. It's just the medicine making his arm move and his eyes move and so forth. They called him back in. There are about three or four different references I consulted to get this story. Either three or five times, they called him back in. And let me tell you, if I have a family calling me back in three to five times because they believe someone's alive, I am going to take that pretty seriously. He did not. He said, no, it's just the medicines. He's got a lot of air in his chest. He needs to get that out in order to die. He needs to expire. At any rate, finally, the wife pointed out according to one erroneous newspaper statement, she pointed to a vein throbbing in his neck, and she said, look, that's a pulse. Well, veins don't have pulses. Arteries do. But still, she found a pulse. Oh, my God, said the doctor, he's alive. No sugar, she said. That's what I've been telling you for the past 2 hours. They did transfer the patient to another hospital. He had, and this is what made things complicated, he had a heart attack. He had an artery that was blocked off in his heart, and that's what they were working on. They knew he had had the heart attack. He also had a collapsed lung. And many times a collapsed lung will prohibit you from getting the proper blood flow back to your heart, and so it may make it appear that you don't have a pulse. So apparently he did survive the heart attack, but the collapsed lung was affecting his breathing and his pulse, possibly. I mean, I'm just guessing on this. This is all in court. It's in litigation. They're not allowed to talk about it, but, of course, we at Health Matters will talk about absolutely anything. And so we're talking about it. And I think, you know, I mentioned to Shelley when we were talking about this case before the radio show, you know, first of all, I teach my students the words of the coroner in the Land of Oz. He said, as coroner, I've examined her. And I certify that she is not only merely dead, she is most sincerely dead. And I tell them, if you are going to pronounce someone, you make sure they are not only merely dead, they are most sincerely dead. Take your time. Look for anything, any signs of life whatsoever, to avoid situations like this, at the very least, pronouncing someone a couple of minutes before they're actually truly dead. But that is just horrific. The other thing is, if a family calls me back three to five times about anything, I'm going to look at that thing really, really hard.
Wouldn't you after the first time call back?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm. But 2 hours and 2 hours and 40 minutes from the time that he pronounced him dead until they saw the neck vein throbbing. And obviously this family's anguish was great. They wanted punitive damages, that he, in fact, caused them psychological harm. And this is sad. They said he was so bad, he did not intentionally cause them harm, but he was just such a bad doctor that they wanted punitive damages because he was such a bad doctor.
Well, could you imagine being the patient? That's pretty frightening.
Yeah. It is a horror. You know, they used to put the bells, right? People could pull the string if they were buried prematurely.
You guys are talking about some really, like, I don't want to talk about this. Why do we have to talk? Who came up with this topic?
It's, I mean, dead
Why
men
did
don't
you
move.
Do this?
Oh, let me tell you where that quote came from. The doctor called the Niagara County coroner to remove his body, to collect his body because he was dead. The coroner went in and said, and I quote, "Dead people don't move. He needs to go in there and check for a pulse." Apparently, I mean, the people that treated him all could not find a pulse when that lung collapsed, but obviously that pulse came back, and the coroner listened to the family.
Do you think these physicians are going to practice medicine again?
You know, I mean, I don't. This is a court case, and there are two sides to it, and all that. But honestly, I hope not.
I mean,
I just can't see how I would have a difficult time thinking of a good argument I can make for this.
Let's play devil's advocate. How are there two sides here? I mean, I get the initial diagnosis can be, you know, I get that, but I mean, you're right. I mean, how many times do you got to go back and check?
Well, I don't think he checked. I mean, I think that's the point.
Well, that's even worse.
Yeah.
The frustration. And the thing was, the wife said this. She said, I thought he knew what he was doing. He said, you know, those movements would stop, that it was just a medicine. But they didn't stop. And then the pulse came, and she could see him following her with his eyes. And, you know, it's got to be just absolutely unnervingly creepy. But she stayed with her husband, to her credit, and tried to get him help that he needed. Oh,
does this speak to anything about how sometimes in the hospital, I think working in the hospital, we all know there are certain family members that maybe either have a medical experience or maybe are just have an aggressive personality, but they control situations like this in a more, gosh, I don't want to use the word aggressive, but they have a more positive control of things. As to where some people just ride along and do what the medical staff tells you.
She assumed. She bowed to his so-called expertise and obviously regrets that.
You know, and the thing is, it's sometimes that's good to do that, and sometimes...
Well, it brings up another rule. I mentioned, you know, make sure that their people are actually dead. Secondly, pay attention to families. I think the other thing is if someone you love is in the hospital, you recognize that it is not a guarantee of safety. Things happen both due to personalities or people, but also just due to our very complex system. And it really helps to have someone who is awake and not sick to help your loved one navigate the hospital situation. So I think one of the best things you can do if someone you love is in the hospital is visit, and ask questions.
And now we want you to rest.
We're going to take a break and come back with a little more encouraging show in our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
And I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the, what do we call it now? The 13.5th, the 13 and a half, the 13 and 5 tenths, I think is what you like.
13 and 6 12.
The show that's between 13 and 14
six
times.
12, 6 of 1 and half a dozen of 14. The annual fall spectacular show, because we don't remember when we started doing this.
Wouldn't it be 8 out of 14?
I don't know. I mean, if we're looking at a year.
Yeah, it was either 13 or 14. I just don't remember which one it was. That's the thing. We've done this show 13 or 14 times, and I can't figure out because I don't have notes that far back.
At this point, maybe it's 15 or 16. You know, who knows with you?
Oh, I've been keeping track since I stopped keeping track. I've been keeping close records.
You got it down to like a 6-month.
Yeah, it's a 13 or 14 show, okay. But I don't know which one it is.
How about we just lie and say it's the 14th? That way it's easier to say.
No, I am very, very – accuracy is very important. And if it averages out to 13.5, that's what I'm going to tell
if
people.
If accuracy was important, they wouldn't have us doing this show.
Well, you got me there. Our sponsor for the second time, Shoes with Tread. When a fearsome monster wants you dead, when terror fills your heart with dread, you best be wearing Shoes with Tread. That's right, Shoes with Tread. That way you can outrun those slow-moving monsters and maintain your footing and not fall at a critical time during the horror film you find yourself in. Or, practically, if someone you love answers the front door in socks and risky business and that old-time rock and roll is not playing in the background, maybe it's time to get them Shoes with Tread.
And that should be frightening to you, to see your loved one show up in a situation that could cause them to fall.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. Barefoot, once again, walking barefoot or wearing socks indoors increases your risk of falling by up to 11 times compared with walking around in athletic shoes. Now, it is very difficult to wear athletic shoes. It is, I think, especially as you get older, the fact that you can slide your foot into something, or for that matter, wear nothing at all on your feet is a good thing. Now, we've had this conversation before. My son, who is somewhat of a neat freak, and my daughter, who grew up doing research. She does ocean research, and she obviously grew up along the beach and spent quite a bit of her time there. Neither one of them wants us to wear our shoes in their house for sand and sanitary purposes or whatever. Our response has been to bring shoes with tread that are specifically for wearing in their house. My wife and I each have a pair of shoes that we put on their house because around our house, there are so many needles and odds and safety pins and all sorts of things that you could blunder into. Walking barefoot is just not an option. At any rate, we do recommend shoes with tread as one of the ways to avoid falls. I'm going to talk first about why falls are so serious for our senior citizens, and then a delightful piece of research that I enjoyed very much from China. And it was published in Case Reports in Clinical Medicine back in January, and I saved it specifically for the Fall Spectacular. Now, first of all, let's do the grim stuff. This came from Medscape Medical News from the National Osteoporosis Foundation, the brutal toll of osteoporotic fractures. Now, keep in mind, osteoporosis, the thinning of the bones that occurs naturally as a person gets older anyway, but has an accelerated pace in people who smoke, people who take corticosteroids, medicines like prednisone, people who are extremely thin and don't do much weight-bearing exercise. September 20th, 2019, in the United States, 2 million Medicare beneficiaries sustained 2.3 million fractures in 2015. So that's pretty much one fracture for every Medicare beneficiary. I think some of them may have had multiple fractures, most likely. But 2 million beneficiaries, 2.3 million osteoporotic fractures in 2015, and nearly one in five died within 12 months of the new fracture. Now, this is one of the things that bothers me. This is, by the way, a very serious condition, and I appreciate that. But osteoporotic fractures happen to old people. So when you say one in five died within 12 months of a new fracture, you kind of imply that the fracture caused the death. And that is not so. If you get to the point where you are not able to stand up reliably, where you cannot keep your balance, where you are not wearing shoes with tread, then you are at much higher risk of dying, fracture or no fracture, but the fracture is one marker of a person who is getting weaker and less able to stand up. All right, here is the Elizabeth Thompson, the CEO of the National Osteoporosis Foundation. The data show that osteoporotic fractures are responsible for more hospitalizations than heart attacks, strokes, and breast cancer combined.
That's an interesting combination.
Yeah, that is true. We at Health Matters agree with that. However, we point out breast cancer is really not a big hospitalizer. Most of breast cancer therapy is done as an outpatient. So throwing in breast cancer, I think a heart attack or a stroke will put you in the hospital. More people are hospitalized with broken bones than heart attacks and strokes. But breast cancer, I think, was a bit of a misleader. Now, one thing, and I really want our radio fans to hear this, if someone you love is elderly and has what we call an osteoporotic fracture, that is, they break their wrist when they fall, not from height, they just simply trip and fall, and they break a wrist or a hip or something else in a simple slip and fall situation, they have osteoporosis and it should be treated. And the Osteoporosis Foundation has published some new guidelines indicating that if they are hospitalized with that type of fracture, we need to go ahead and start treating them for osteoporosis. We don't have to do additional scans. We do not have to wait. The fact that they had a fracture should be communicated from the orthopedic people to the primary care physician, and we should have a plan for treating osteoporosis really pretty much as soon as they leave the hospital. It is recommended that every woman starting age 65, every man starting age 70 have baseline bone mineral density, according to the National Osteoporosis Foundation. That generally doesn't happen. I mean, we are getting a little bit better at screening the women. Screening the men is still a bit of a mystery because we're not sure exactly how and who we should be treating there. But I will say, if you or someone you love had a simple fall and broke a bone and did not fall from a second-story window or did not fall on top of a farm machinery or something like that, then you probably have osteoporosis. You should talk to your healthcare provider about maybe getting started on treatment immediately, pretty much as soon as you get out of the hospital for your fracture. That is a good piece of information. And the toll, again, I think because it happens to old people, female beneficiaries, 79% higher rate of osteoporotic fracture than males. Most common fractures, spine and hip, 40% of all fractures in Medicare population in 2015. 20% of people die within 12 months of a new fracture. Hip fracture had actually a 30% risk of dying in 12 months. And once again, that's extensive osteoporosis. It is older people. It is frail people who do not have good balance. And that is the risk. So you've got to recognize this is not simply a nuisance, a broken bone. These are markers, either markers or causes of people losing their health. Next up, the fun one. This is published in the Case Reports in Clinical Medicine, January 2019. The title is Fall Prevention Education Reduces the Falling Rate of People, Osteoporosis Patients Who Are Treated with a Medicine for Osteoporosis. In other words, they're treating the medicine, the people with the medicine, and then they did an education and they reduced their rate of falling. Now, the neat thing about it, first of all, it's a good study, and it has a bunch of questions here that I'm going to read to you that outline the risk factors for breaking a bone. But secondly, the principal authors are at Sun Yat-sen University in Gangzhou in China, and this thing did not translate that well. So it is cute, it is funny, and it also, I think, will help you understand how to prevent falls. This is what they did at Sun Yat-sen. They took 178 female patients visiting their osteoporosis department from January 2016 to June 2017. There was an observation group, that was 92 of the patients, and there was an intervention group, 86 of the patients. The observation patients, they got their treatment for brittle bones, and they received a questionnaire about factors related to falls. Now, the observation group only received regular orders of adopting a healthy lifestyle, while those in the intervention group received a fall prevention assessment and education and some telephone follow-up. Here is their fall prevention assessment. It consists of 10 questions. Question number one. Do you have any underlying diseases as follow? Nervous system diseases such as stroke or Parkinson's, dizziness. Parkinson's disease or dizziness. Mm-hmm. Cardiovascular diseases such as hypertension or heart failure. Or diabetes. There were three there that they looked for. Question two. If there are any of the diseases above, is it given specialist treatment? They want you to see a specialist for your heart, your Parkinson's, your diabetes. Okay. Question three, are you convenient to walk? Do you need to use the auxiliary device?
Love it. Are you convenient to walk?
Are you convenient to walk? What do
you
think?
It's never convenient to walk.
Well, questions are A, B, and C. Yes, I am convenient to walk. I don't need to use the auxiliary device. Or no, I am inconvenient to walk, and I have used the auxiliary device. Or three, or C, no, I am inconvenient to walk, but I don't want to use the auxiliary device. Rick, do you want to use the auxiliary device?
No.
I knew you would not.
Well, doesn't it depend on the auxiliary device?
I believe it's a cane.
No.
But.
Oh, you think it's a cane?
I think okay. So. What did you think it was? Walker?
Knee scooter?
Scooter? You know, I don't know.
The auxiliary Hoverboard. Device. I think it's a cane.
You know,
I liked it.
Depends.
Anyway, I'm pretty convenient to walk, actually.
Me too.
Overall, yeah. Four, good question. Do you see things clearly? Do you need to wear glasses? A, yes, I can see things clearly. I don't need to wear glasses. B, nope, can't see things clearly, and I have worn glasses.
So
that's C, I can't see things clearly, but I don't want to wear glasses.
So are they saying – see, that's confusing because is it
– I think it's just as simple as it could be. I bet you the ones who don't want the auxiliary device are the ones who are not wearing their glasses. That's what I think.
When I don't put my contacts in, it's not that things are not clear. I guess my eyes aren't bad enough to make things actually out of focus so bad that it looks fuzzy.
I bet you couldn't even see the auxiliary device if you had one.
I'd probably look right past it.
That could be a problem.
There you go. All right, question five, apropos to this radio show, do you wear appropriate anti-skid shoes? Anti-skid shoes. How's your shoes, Rick? Are you going wearing anti-skids today?
Crocs don't slip much.
Just let our radio fans take a moment there. You know, sip on whatever beverage you're drinking and think about Crocs don't slip much.
You know, I mean, every once in a while I got to lock them into four-wheel drive mode, but for the most part,
What Rick means, we've had this discussion before. Rick, he slides his feet into the shoes, and four-wheel drive mode is when he pulls the strap around behind his heel. That's four-wheel drive mode for Crocs.
Well, that's when you don't want them to fall off. It's, you know, you're going to be in tough terrain.
So is that your auxiliary device?
I don't know.
All right.
Crocs represent retirement. That's the thing. That's when I retire, I will only wear
socks.
Crocs.
Crocs are better than socks. Let's all say that together.
Crocs are better than socks.
I'll give you that. Question number six, is the light bright enough at U Home?
At U Home?
I'm reading the question.
Did you leave out a letter
bright
or
enough
something?
At U Home? No, I cut, I pasted.
Is it the letter U or is it a Y-O-U?
Y-O-U.
Y-O-U.
At U Home.
Yes or no?
So they missed an R.
Right. But that's the question. Is it bright enough? And you think about it. Here's my question, though. A person says, you know, the light is not bright enough at my home. You think, well, what is wrong with you, you know? But I admit it. This is China, and you got to recognize that may be a different...
Tony, is the color right at your light at home?
Well,
do you choose the correct color?
I don't want to wear my glasses or use the auxiliary device, so I don't know.
So what is the color of the light in your house? Do you know?
Oh, you're talking about, we use the warm lights. We don't use those white ones are just too much for me.
Are they white?
We use LEDs. Yeah.
No, I mean, really, are they white?
Well, it's sunlight. They've got the warmth. Yes, the daylight thing.
So do you know the temperature? I'm trying to hang you up in something here because I don't think you know.
All right, so here we go. I'm not even going to hang up in this. I'm going to keep going because we need to get through this. Number seven, is the floor of your house anti-skidding? Is the floor of your house anti-skidding?
I don't know. I wear Crocs.
His house could turn at a 45-degree angle. Yeah. He locks in his four-wheel drive straps, and
his auxiliary device. Yeah, that's a good point. Do you need both of them anti-skid?
I don't know.
I mean, can't anti-skid and anti-skid equal skid?
Well, I'm thinking we have a wooden floor, and I suppose that's a skiddy floor, right? I mean, because carpet would be anti-skidding or rubber.
I don't know. I've slipped on carpet many days going down the steps.
Okay, fair enough.
It can get, you know, it can get kind of just a little bit matted, and, you know what I mean?
Is there any anti-skidding armrest in the toilet of your house?
An anti-skid armrest.
My toilets don't have armrests.
Nope.
Well, there you go. I mean, right there, this is the intervention we're looking at. Number nine, is your home bed too high, and are you easy to fall down?
Well, that's two questions.
Right, and how high is too high?
Yes is A, B is no.
But it's two questions.
This is what I like
I don't know
about
what
this.
You,
I really like about this.
I don't know what you mean.
And then finally, number 10, and this is the one that borders on philosophical.
What?
Number 10, question 10, is the path that you often go out smooth? Do you often fall down while you go out through the path? And the answer is A, yes, it is smooth. No, it is unsmooth. Unsmooth. And I often fall down while I go out through the path.
These questions sound
Our radio fans, we want to ask you, is the path that you often go out smooth?
Is it?
Yeah, that's the question. Now, results. The difference in improvement of fall risk factors between the groups was significant, except for diabetes without treatment. It turns out that even the education, they didn't do much about the diabetes. In the intervention group, 5.8% fell at least once during their follow-up. In the control group, 19.6% reported falling. So for people who are on osteoporosis treatment, a fall prevention using this particular questionnaire cuts your risk of falling by basically 2/3.
We should try it here.
And see if,
and see if it works.
I was thinking, okay, I'm going to make the path that I go out often smooth.
But see, if you make it smooth, then it's not anti-skid.
Well, I think that's the outside part. Well, I've got the anti-skid in the house. I'm going to put the anti-skid floor and the anti-skid armrest on my toilet. That just sounds like a good move.
Have you ever seen a toilet with an armrest? I mean, they get nicknamed a throne, but I just don't believe that.
You don't have an armrest on your toilet? Well, you know, you've got the, I don't know about anti-skid. I mean, they put the bars.
I usually don't slide off the toilet.
On a handicap toilet, they'll put bars on either side.
But that would constitute a wall being next to your toilet. What if your toilet doesn't sit on a wall?
Yours sits out in the middle of the floor.
Maybe you need an
anti-skid seat. The back of it's on a wall,
seat.
But there's nothing left or right of it.
You just need an anti-skid seat.
Yeah.
Problem
to reduce
solved.
The skid marks.
Has anyway. Every toilet you've ever seen had a wall next to it?
I'm just here
You're
to
You're the
report.
One asking the questions.
I know. I love this study. I thought this was a great study. It was a really difficult one. As you said, I mean, you look at those questions. They're beautifully translated. I think that was the thing. The translation sort of fell down a little bit in getting them in the journal. But still, there's a certain beauty in using the auxiliary device or not, you know. It sounds very imperialistic to ask, are you using the auxiliary device or not?
But it didn't say the auxiliary device is, so it can't be crutches.
No, I think it would be a cane, might be a walker. That's the auxiliary device. Okay. I don't know. But like you said, there were a lot of questions about it. I don't know what an anti-skid floor is, and I'm not sure how to define a smooth path.
Or how high.
Well, and
or how high
the
bed. The
most
bed.
Of the yeah. anti-skid surfaces aren't smooth.
Right, so
they
see,
are rough.
There's a problem.
So what are you going to do, anti-skid, or are you going to go rough? Are you going to do smooth or skid? Or
so maybe the right answer is no.
Shoes with tread, that's right. Crocs with tread, and lock those suckers in four-wheel drive before you go out adventuring
around
your
house.
You've
never wore Crocs, have you? You're not ever going to wear them.
No, I will tell you the honest truth. My house shoes, when I go visit my son, are Crocs. I can just drop them into a suitcase, and we put them by the front door, and he's happy, and we're happy.
And you're away from
and
all the
no
humankind, so nobody local can see you in them.
I don't know. Like I said, I just that's what I do when I go visit my
and
kids.
And you love it, too, don't
and
you?
They
you love
me.
Those things.
Honestly, no. But it
you
does
keep
making my son happy. Well, I mean, I'm not going to go barefoot. I would tell you, I have taken too many things out of people's feet to feel comfortable going barefoot. It just happens. People get first. Sometimes they feel it, sometimes they don't, but they get stuff stuck. Check your feet during the break, and we'll come back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Part of me wants to apologize for the way that last segment ended, but we're going to go ahead and start this third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Shelley Irving.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the, what is this, Rick? This is the 13th
and a halfeth.
0.814ths
I don't even know.
Annual fall spectacular. It's the whole thing's in shambles. It's either the 13th or the 14th.
The 13 and 1 halves show.
All right.
How about just the annual? Do we have to put a number on it?
Yes. Absolutely. That's where health matters. That's what we do.
You know what we could call this the 27 halves show.
Yeah, we could.
That's absurd.
What is your mind racing to see if I'm right?
I'm thinking of how bad that is. I'm embarrassed.
But it's the 27
I'm also
halves.
At our producer, she's about to leave the studio because we're at any
hey,
rate.
You may not like it, but it's accurate.
Dead men don't move, and
they just talk over
bounce
here.
Back and to our first fractional portion and find out about that. Our sponsor for the final time, Shoes with Tread, reminding you when a fearsome monster wants you dead, when terror fills your heart with dread, you best be wearing Shoes with Tread. Shoes with Tread, you're able to outrun those slow-moving monsters, ghouls, and Halloween frights because you have Shoes with Tread, and you will not fall down, sprain your ankle on the log, and become immobile in the face of a horror movie-type situation. That's our sponsor, Shoes with Tread. Now, we've got to switch this then from the Sun Yat-sen University Gangsu approach to fall prevention. This is the National Council on Aging, and this is a couple years old, but still very relevant. Five steps for preventing falls among your older loved ones. Number one, discuss their current health conditions. Are they experiencing problems with managing their health, remembering to take their medications, any side effects? Is it more difficult for them to do things they used to do easily? Well, let me just tell you, yes, it is more difficult for me to do things I used to do easily. Play basketball, date women. I don't know anything is more difficult when you get to my age. Comb my hair.
I would have said mow in the yard. I would have said things like mow in the yard.
Okay.
You know, that whole girlfriend thing, Tony, that was slippery slope there.
I know,
buddy.
It was. Unfortunately, I'm wearing shoes with tread. The problem is, as far as mowing the yard, I have much better equipment than I had when I was younger. Right. I mean,
clearly, as you get older, you're not thinking the same.
Yeah, that's true. Navigating strange cities and things like that gets to be tricky. Question number two, ask about their last eye checkup. We really do believe, both in China and the United States, that vision plays an important role. And they mentioned two things here that I think are really important. If they have those automatic tint-changing lenses, they are cool. They make young people look very cool. But if you're an old person and your lenses are changing, that can be actually dangerous. Not necessarily the best choice of lenses. Also, bifocals, especially on stairs, they actually have been associated with a higher rate of falls. The problem is your reading lenses, which are at the bottom of your glasses, do not give you a clear vision of the ground below. They are meant for reading, not making sure that your feet are actually in the right place. And so you have blurred vision when it comes to the ground immediately in front of you, which is not a good thing. Number three, so you've asked them about their health conditions, discuss that, their medications and so forth, ask about their last eye checkup. Number three, notice if they're holding on to walls or furniture or someone else when walking. And the typical thing, I have now, both my mother-in-law and my mother, I saw this, is when they get to the car, rather than easing into their seat, they just simply collapse into the car seat. They oof, and down they go, and they let the car catch them rather than purposefully getting into the car seat because they do not have the leg strength to lower themselves gradually. They just plop.
Or they'll surf the furniture, you know, yes, like little kids do when they start learning how to walk.
If that's the case, they mentioned a trained physical therapist who can help your loved one improve their balance strength through gait and gait through exercise. Maybe a cane or walker is necessary. We call those the auxiliary device. Number four, talk about medications. Medications. This is something that I see. These people in their 80s are on 15 or 20 different medicines. I could not do that as a teenager. I can certainly not do it now. God help me if I'm on 20 medicines when I am in my 80s. Mm-hmm. Beware of non-prescription medications that contain sleep aids, anything with a PM in its name. Unfortunately, the PM does not stop in the AM. So the next day, they may be hungover. They may be a little bit more dizzy, more balance issues with those. And number five, do a walk-through safety assessment of the home. Is there adequate lighting? Now, especially as a person gets older, either to save money or to avoid doing housework, they turn the lights down. Lots of these little candle flickering lights, lots of low-level lights, no bright lights, keep the overhead lights off and so forth. And the problem is then that takes away the visual cues you need to maintain your balance. Stairs. Two secure rails on all stairs. A rail that you can wrap your hand around is much better than a rail that you put your fingers on. So those big old wooden rails that you put your hands on top of are not as good as, say, a pipe. A pipe rail is an excellent way to make sure there are no falls on the stairs. Bathrooms, grab bars in the tub, shower, and near the toilet. I think these are the friction, the anti-skid armrests that we've heard so much about in our second fractional portion. For greater safety, consider using a shower chair. And this is a very simple thing. You can buy a plastic chair anywhere, stick it in the shower. As long as it is stable, having a place to sit down and shower is a useful thing.
And get rid of throw rugs. I didn't hear that on the list.
True. Uneven surfaces. You know, once again, is your pathway smooth, I think. In this case, smooth means no ups and downs, no cords, no throw rugs, no elevated areas, mats and things like that. Those are just things that people wind up tripping over. And then the last thing, and they didn't mention this, but I think we've got to say it, pets increase your risk of falling. Dogs more than cats, but any pet, any animal with any sentient living thing that is lurking around your feet has the potential to move in a direction you don't anticipate, and that can be a problem. Next up, continuing the Halloween theme, This one got my attention, Dead or Married, The Choice Grows Starker. This was from John Giever, who's the managing editor at MedPage Today, published October 10th. A CDC analysis. The mortality gap between married persons and everyone else continues to get wider. Now, we are looking at three married people, but Shamari, you are not married. Shamari, our producer, is not married, so she is at high risk for mortality, according to the CDC. And I'm so sorry.
But isn't that like 50 years down the road?
Well, think about it, Rick, for a minute. How many producers have we gone through? I mean, they've not all died.
They didn't all fall.
No, but they've not all died, but I know that
there are a lot of producers. One of them locked herself out of their trailer. I mean, I'm sorry, locked herself in
their
trailer.
He said he got iced in. Yeah.
He said he got iced in, but he was locked in.
We still don't believe it. Years later, we're still thinking about that.
Unmarried, right?
He was, I think he was unmarried.
Yeah, I think he did. I think I saw on Facebook he got married.
But then.
Yeah. All right. So in 2017, the age-adjusted death rate for married people ages 25 and older was 780 people died per year per 100,000 people. 780 per 100,000. If you look at people who were never married, people who were divorced or widowed, the rate was around between 13 and 1,600 per 100,000 versus 780 per 100,000. It was essentially twice as high for unmarried people as married people, according to the Healthy Stats released by the CDC's National Center for Health Statistics. That is, this is a fact. People who are not married are about twice as likely to die in any given year as people who are married. Previous studies found the lower mortality risk for married people, either selectivity in entering marriage, and they think about selectivity in entering marriage. They're saying, well, healthier people are more likely to marry.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, when you think about selectivity, it may be sort of like choosing a softball team. If you are the last person chosen for the softball team, you're probably not a very good softball player. Fair to say. So if everyone has gotten married except you,
you could be a diamond in the rough.
You could be. I think if I were the one person in my group of friends who had not gotten married, I probably would be wearing shoes with tread, though. I think, you know, because there's something obviously not quite right. Women have looked at me and said, that's not it. And I'm sorry for the happy single people out there. The thing is, you're twice as likely to die. And we're trying to explain it. So maybe healthier people get married. Maybe we nothing to do with health. There's just something about you that just says that's not the one. But for whatever reason, that may be it. Or the other possibility is the marriage itself protects your health. All of that nagging, all of that shared experience and all that combined actually protects your health. And it works for men as well as women. And the previous arguments, Rick, you know, we talked about this, is that the women save the men. Mm-hmm. But somehow taking care of the men saves the women. Maybe it really sharpens their judgment, figuring out how to take care of the men. I don't know.
I think it gives us a reason to hang around. I mean, what would happen? What would happen
to him if I did die?
I mean, you know, I think it's an exercise in responsibility, right? I mean, I think families traditionally, not always, but traditionally have children or activities, or you know, I mean, you start getting that together, you all of a sudden you add a layer of responsibility that forces you to make different decisions.
You're more careful.
You're probably a little more careful. I mean, if you have kids, you're probably not going to want to orphan them right out of the gate. I mean, you know, you're probably trying to, you know, keep your health better. Or I'm just saying, I think in general, you're probably more – I mean, I know that's a generalization. It's probably not fair. But, I mean, I'm the first to tell you that me getting married at a young age is, you know, grew me up pretty fast. It kept me from doing some of the more dumb things a 20-year-old will do.
Yeah.
And so I suspect that has some play in it. It does, again, it generally
now,
speaking.
Now, go back to the dumb things for a minute. I'm messing with you. But the other thing is, did you stop doing the dumb things because you thought that your wife, Mary, would be disappointed with you? I mean, did you do that out of a sense of obligation to her? Or did you say, she's just going to?
No, I think, Tony, I mean, you know, in our case, you know, I did dumb things long before I met her, right?
Right.
Mean, I did dumb things that actually, you know, I mean, you know, we talk about this all the time. I mean, we exaggerate it, and at the hint, at the core of this, there's a little bit of truth. But the fact is men do all that dumb, stupid, partying, risky behavior to try to win over the affection of women. That's what stands. That's what makes me different from you, is I can do it better and more fun than you. So I'm going to stand out in a crowd compared to you, Tony, because I can just – I was pretty good at, you know.
You can out-dumb most people.
No, I can out-dumb a lot of people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's rare that you can out-dumb me. Now that I've married,
I will concede to his dumbness. I mean, the point is, you know, if a woman were looking, I would be looking up at Rick and saying, man, you are dumb in ways that I could not possibly
But you don't understand, Tony. I'm exponentially less dumb now that I'm married. So what you don't even know me when I was at my dumbest.
Good point. I'm pretty impressed with where you are now, and yet it was so much worse. Now, Shelley, for purposes of this radio show, you're a woman.
Yes.
Did you?
And have been for
when
some
I'm
time.
Not on the radio show, I'm also a woman. We'll just clarify that
now. But you're in charge then of answering the question, do women change? I mean, I think Rick is exactly right. He and I were both, we did extremely dumb things because single guys do that.
Yeah.
Do you see a change in women's behavior? I mean, is it the fact that you now have a project that you have after you're married? Or do women's, do you feel that your behavior's changed in a healthier way? In a less dumb way when you got married?
Well, I think for women, it's when the children come.
Okay.
You know, because, for example, I used to ride motorcycles for fun with my husband off-road.
No.
Yeah, I did. And then you have a child, and I just have no desire to do those things anymore, whereas my husband is happy to get on a motorcycle and go for a ride.
Still.
Yes. I mean, he wears a helmet. He's smart about it. But
did he used to wear a helmet?
Yes.
Okay, so he always wore a helmet.
Yeah, he always wore a helmet, yeah.
So he really hadn't changed very much.
Well, in some ways he has. He doesn't go riding as often as he used to.
To stop being dumb for two.
Right.
At this point.
Right.
Yeah, I see that. So we've got some theories here. First of all, maybe married people select the best softball players, and then the ones that are left are not. And they may be happily single, but truthfully, they cannot play softball. That's one possibility. Secondly, it may be that at least the guys are pretty certain not to do dumb things, and sometimes the women don't do dumb things as well after they get married. Or have children, I think. But this is married. Not necessarily the children, but this is married. Now, the other thing they mentioned, with two-income couples, additional financial benefits, and we know that socioeconomic status and education are the two biggest drivers of life expectancy and health, far more than access to medical care or anything else. If you are educated, if you are reasonably wealthy, your life expectancy is going to be substantially higher than people that don't have those advantages. Here's the thing. Since 2010, the marriage benefit has increased steadily. The age-adjusted mortality rates for the married decreased by about 7% between 2010 and 2017. They decreased 2% for never married. They stayed the same for divorced. And they increased, comparing 2010 to 2017, the age-adjusted mortality rates increased 6% for widows and widowers. So there is something, I mean, it may be, you know, our society has changed. It may be we're not taking very good care of our elderly people, and their mortality rates are actually increasing. I don't know. That is interesting, because whatever we talked about, dumbness, income, selectivity, something, this is not a set target. This is actually a moving target. And the benefits of marriage, again, dead or married, the choice grows starker. As time has passed, the benefits of being married have actually increased.
Social isolation.
Yeah, could be that we don't have the community to take care of single people that we used to have. Everybody's inside basically playing on their computers. I don't know. Could be. Rick's looking at me. He's saying,
Don't you dare.
Okay.
Please.
I'm going to leave you. The one thing I'll just
say something about the 13 and a half fall or something.
Okay, all right. Here's what I've got. The five best states for flu shot coverage: West Virginia, Washington, Minnesota, Maryland, Rhode Island, Kentucky ranked 35th for flu vaccine coverage. That just seems a shame, but I'll stop there.
We can do better, Kentucky.
Get your flu shot.
Special thanks to our Morehead State Public Radio producers, Shamari Mosley, and to Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show and try to guess the source of these classic horror movie quotes.
Wendy, darling, light of my life, I'm not going to hurt you. You didn't let me finish my sentence. I said I'm not going to hurt you. I'm just going to bash your brains in.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
What an excellent day for an exorcism.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
To the ships at sea who can hear my voice, look across the water, into the darkness, look for the fog.
They're here.
Whatever you do, don't fall asleep.
They're all going to laugh at you.
A boy's best friend is his mother.
Never say who's there. Don't you watch scary movies? It's a death wish. You might as well come out to investigate the strange noise or something.
You know, it's Halloween. Everyone's entitled to one good scare, huh?
Come and play with us, Danny. Forever and ever and ever.
That one's an eerie one. I'm every nightmare you ever had. I'm your worst dream come true. I'm everything you were ever afraid of.
I do wish we could chat longer, but I'm having an old friend for dinner.
And finally, the most terrifying line of all. Tune in next week for more exciting news from the world of clinical research on Moorhead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at St. Clair Healthcare in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.